You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
It's getting ugly on Twitch. A couple of you pedophile liar accusations on going at it.
Wow. I love when people like accuse the other side of your side. Is this a, people are so fringy now.
Wow.
They're just fringy for no reason. I'm going to go all the way in on this one.
Well, I put, but
in my chat,
you don't even know each other. You're just having an argument about something and you pedophile
liar. To touching children.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Chad Brown, 76ers.
Yeah.
How about that? That is interesting. I didn't know that. Well, you know, he and Daryl worked together for so long, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that
they had a good working relationship. Tad stayed out of Daryl's way, but they were, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, obviously this is Daryl making that call.
I would think it's easier for Daryl to make the move because you still have the same pool of players. Tad's got to go and learn Philadelphia business, which is a lot different than, you know, you have your relationships here in Houston. You got to get.
Well, let me ask you this. Speaking of Chinese business, we know that, because Daryl's in Philadelphia now, so they're, I would imagine that. Wait, does Houston get Chinese business back now?
Because Daryl's
gone? Or does China now allow Rockets games to, this is a serious question. You know, China banned all the Rockets stuff. They took down all Rockets stuff. Are the Rockets back? This has got to be a Maury thing for them, right?
Or is this an Astros thing that everybody wears an Astros jersey was guilty?
Well, I don't know. I think China knows that, like, Philadelphia is off the table for them now.
I would imagine.
Yeah, have to be. This is going to follow Daryl Morey. Because I was just thinking maybe Tad Brown, in his background in business, international business, maybe that would help with as much international business as they've done, well, specifically with China. But then I remembered, oh, yeah, Daryl Morey's there. Well, I think that's a non-starter for Tad Brown.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. Or does Philadelphia need... Do they need, Chinese business in Philadelphia? I don't know. Or maybe China's just like, whatever, Daryl Morey, just go away. No, whatever. We still, the people, listen, I don't know how popular Philadelphia is in China anyway. The Rockets, we know we're very popular.
Can the Rockets come back now? I think that would be big in China. We know that, we know Tillman would love it. Brian makes an interesting point here, and it kind of plays into the point we're talking about. He said, so the last time a baseball player hosted SNL was Derek Jeter. You know what year, John?
Wow, would it had to been 2009?
2001.
Wow.
20 years since a baseball player. Before him, the only baseball-adjacent hosts were Billy Martin, Bob Uecker, and George Steinbrenner. Yep, MLB has sucked a long time at marketing its players. This is kind of the point, though. Yeah. If, you know, basketball, you can find basketball. Charles Barkley, for example, is a guy that could easily transcend a sport. To host SNL, you have to transcend your sport, right?
Yep.
J.J. Watt. Yep. Okay, that makes some sense. Who's the baseball players who transcend their sport right now? It's not Ohtani. And Ohtani would never be on SNL. He literally can't be on SNL.
Right.
Tatis? I mean, he has the swagger to do it. Does he have the personality?
Yes.
Does maybe, based on what I've seen from him.
Judge.
Aaron Judge could do it.
Yeah, especially
since
he's New York.
Now, the Astros were on a segment. They were on a segment back in 17, the news segment, but that's not the same thing. To host an SNL, the reason we're using that is because that is a transcendent, that would involve a transcendent player who goes beyond his sport. And that's kind of probably what Stephen A. Smith was thinking about, a guy who can bring people in. Because you have to remember, baseball's not basketball. Basketball transcends into movies. You've seen athletes. I mean, look at Ray Allen was the star of a movie. Ray Allen was actually the lead in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James, of course, transcends his sport. Is there any kind of a LeBron James in baseball? Absolutely not. There's not even a beard like a James Harden, you know, who has a beard marketing gimmick and stuff like that. It's more of a baseball issue that they are way behind basketball in that regard. The ability to branch out and bring in people from outside of basketball and catch their attention. Baseball doesn't have that. And baseball's always been at that disadvantage, really, for, you know, I would say since we've been doing a radio show. And the one thing that really brought baseball a ton of attention, home run derby. And when I say home run derby, the steroid era
yeah.
is what brought the attention. And but that's unwanted attention, obviously.
Right, right.
But it wasn't unwanted at the time when they were benefiting from Barry Bonds smacking over 70 homers.
No, but everybody knew what that was about. It was all with a grain of salt. We all knew that Barry was a monster. He was just bigger than life, and a super freak. We knew about that. Let's switch it up a little bit. I want to talk a little bit of football. First of all, there is there's an article out on 33rd team report, and the article is by Mike Tannenbaum that Jameis Winston is ready for a breakout season. I'm going to go under on that. I'm going to say that by week 8 or 9, Jameis Winston is going to how many games will Jameis Winston not start, not because of injury, but because of poor performance? How many games will he not start?
Jameis Winston breakout thing. This isn't the first time I've seen that. I mean, I just can't. So Jameis Winston then should be your play for comeback player of the year.
Absolutely.
He should be your play. And I get it because he's a quarterback.
Is there any, who's coming off of a terrible
injury? The
two
comeback players of the year candidates, the front runners, were Cam and Ben Roethlisberger last year, and neither one got it. But it was a quarterback who literally had his legs smashed into a million pieces.
Well, is there anybody coming off of a horrific injury? Well, Christian McCaffrey.
I mean, Saquon Barkley.
Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, Saquon was hurt in the very first game.
And so Christian missed the whole year, too.
No. No, McCaffrey didn't.
He missed most of the year. I mean, he was injured early.
Was it that early?
Yeah, he was injured early.
I don't remember him being injured that early. Let's see. Last year, yeah, you're right, only 59 attempts. Wow, I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah, he can be comeback, too.
I know my guy because I got him in my auction in the first round. Spent a bunch of money, and Saquon's gone. Poof. Yeah, boom. There's my whole season.
That's
poof.
It.
Gone.
Yeah.
No, Jameis is not going to have.
I don't believe in comeback player being a guy who sucked or was benched because he couldn't start. I don't believe that's comeback player of the year. But okay, I see you. That's how it's given out. If in fact, listen. Why is Jameis going to be so much better under Sean? Why is Jameis not going to throw interceptions under Sean Payton? Because it's what Jameis does. Why is he going to be so much better than under Bruce? I don't get that.
I don't either. Well, the thought is got to be, well, look at what Sean Payton has done with Drew Brees. I would argue that Drew Brees was a really big part of that. And Drew Brees really played to his own strengths, which were a lot more, doing a lot safer passing. It was more controlled passing. That's not who Jameis is. Now, the flip side of that is if you can get Jameis to buy into controlled passing, but he's still, let's analyze this and evaluate this. He's still a guy with a longer windup that takes a little bit more time to cut loose. He's been a habitual bad decision maker in terms of his awareness of spatial relationship, meaning how quick can he process and assess the window he has to throw into? He's made a ton of bad decisions as a starter in the pros and throughout his time at Florida State. You are literally, it is a Hail Mary, frankly, to expect him to take care of the football now after he's shown you for 6 years. You want to go back into college football, he's shown you for like 8 years that he doesn't take care of the football. If he's shown you that for about 8 years and you still don't believe him, I mean, okay.
I'm not all in. I'm telling you, Taysom Hill is going to be the starter for this football team by week 9.
I tend to agree with you. I think Taysom Hill is going to get a lot more run than people believe. And the Jameis thing to me, if you don't take care of the football in the NFL, you just aren't going to stay a quarterback.
And especially Sean Payton's going to be watching that after having Drew Brees all those years throwing for 75% and watching Jameis throw it into the defender's arms, and he's going to go like, oh, my God, what the hell? What the hell is this? We can't do this anymore. So I don't know. This whole Jameis Winston is going to resurrection. I don't get it.
Okay, so I don't know if this can be it. Jason in the H makes a good point. What about Joe Burrow? But I don't think you can be a can you be a comeback player if you haven't established yourself yet?
He played 10 games, didn't he?
Yeah, he played.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he played 10.
Close to that.
Yeah.
Close to that. I think less than that, actually. But can you? No, Dak. That's your guy.
Dak is it.
Dak's your guy. Dak's it was horrific injury. Dak's your guy. Was playing really, really well. Really bad injury. Dak is your guy. Dak's got to be your favorite, actually.
Yeah. Joe Burrow, 10 games. 10 games started.
Well, you're on it today.
Yep. So listen. Yeah, I agree. 10 games. Joe Burrow's not going to be. It's Dak. This is Dak's award to win. And I think McCaffrey's got a good chance. If McCaffrey has a huge year like he did the year before, I think he's got a real good chance. Saquon, I'm not sure, is ready. Did you see his comments last week? He's like, I don't know that Saquon is ready to play right away. There was talk at a Giants camp that he's not 100% back.
Well, that's troubling because he got injured in September. He had plenty of time to get back.
Yeah, I don't know that. Saquon,
well, I say plenty of time to get back. I mean, I guess we're still at about 10 months.
I'm not putting my 9 money months. On Saquon.
Maybe not.
Tell you what. Let's do this on the other side.
Remember when Adrian Peterson shredded his knee and then came back for 2,000?
Yeah. Speaking of which, how do executives, NFL executives, coaches, and players, what do they think of the running back position? The 10 best, according to execs, coaches, and players, best running backs. So, and Saquon is in it. So we will do that on the other side. Still ahead, Matt Carpenter is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk a little baseball here. He's got a great perspective on All-Star and this All-Star thing that's going on, the Astros, and just hitting in general. We'll talk about, we got a lot of good conversation with Matt Carpenter coming your way. But right now, we got Craig DeSerf coming your way.
Craig DeSerf has a lot of different vehicles coming your way. I'm headed out there tomorrow to get service done. It's going to take about an hour to get in and out. It's just scheduled maintenance for my lease. I think I should have done it a few miles ago, but I'm at like 16,000 miles. And so I'm getting scheduled maintenance done. And I know that their maintenance team and their department that they have for service is tremendous. They win the customer service index year after year after year. And they've got a great crew there. No turnover. And they do an amazing job of getting your vehicle taken care of. More importantly, getting you taken care of. It's just one of the things that separates them, I think. They have a lot of different events. They have a big award that they're winning tomorrow. So I'm glad to go out there on the same day that they're being presented an award. The owner's going to be out there. Craig DeSerf wants you to come out because he understands that out in Angleton, it's a little bit more of a drive for you. It's going to take me 42, 43 minutes. But at the same time, the difference it makes from a pricing standpoint, from a trade-in value standpoint, what they're giving you, and really just the way that you're taken care of, not only before the sale, but during and after the sale, big difference makers. I could tell you about the Chevy Silverado. I could tell you about the GMC Sierra crew cab that's out there, but you need to see them for yourselves and make your own decision about the vehicles you're looking for, and then start the car buying experience online, and you're going to find out why it's such a big difference purchasing from Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC. Go to LanceZCars.com. That's LanceZCars.com.
This is Carlos Correa, All-Star and World Series champion, and big fan of Gulf Coast Chevrolet in Angleton. No one will treat you better. Chevy, find new roads.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. 713-780-3776 is the number to hang out with us here on the show. You're more than welcome to do that. Dell, surprisingly ranking the top 10 running backs for 2021, there's no Texan mentioned.
Who is that a surprise to?
It's got to be surprising. Let me ask you guys a question. In all of these, they rank the edge rushers, interior defensive line, off-ball linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties, offensive tackles, interior offensive line. Let me ask you this question. how many Texans show up on all of these lists?
Dude, will you stop?
I'm serious. This is a question.
Name every list again.
Every position.
Okay. And it's top 10?
Top 10.
Okay. One.
Tunsil.
Yeah.
He's third.
That's all. I'm telling you, you put too much stock in this Cunningham thing. Cunningham's not very good.
Cunningham made...
don't care.
Like 12th. He was 12th. He wasn't top 10.
Now, he played better in the second half of the season. The first half of the season, he was terrible. He would literally leave his run fits or get knocked out of his... You know, part of being a linebacker, you got to either learn to take on blocks and constrict the hole, meaning your gap that you're responsible for, you got to tighten it up, make it harder to run. And sometimes you got to come downhill and deliver a blow with your shoulder, or your hands, stack and shed, whatever the case may be, or you have to learn to slip blocks and work around. He was running out of his hole,
right,
out of his gap.
What game was it?
It was Kansas City,
off,
I thought.
That off was- tackle. I thought it was Green Bay. It was just off tackle, and he took a just terrible route, and as did Justin Reed, and he just ran around him and up the sideline, touchdown, like 80 yards on the first play. What was that game? Twitter, what was that game? It was like one of the first plays of the game, and you go, what?
Yeah, it was a road game. I remember.
Oh, I thought it was.
I remember a game on the road. Let me look at the schedule, because I remember a game on the road there. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm. The only guy that shows up in every single position of all of the positions, the only guy that shows up is Laramie Tunsil, and he's considered the third best tackle. And he only costs you $22 a year. That's a nice bargain.
So
if you were ranking the running backs in the NFL.
See, I think it was the Chiefs. Didn't they have
Edwards-Helaire? No, I don't think it was the Chiefs.
Well, didn't they have...
Because I had him on my team. I don't think he ran 80 yards in the first play.
No, because actually, how did this happen?
No,
the Texans only gave up 44 yards to Shady McCoy?
No, I'm pretty sure...
No, it was 2019.
Game. It was a home game.
That's 2019.
Anyway, Lance.
Yeah.
Focus.
Yep.
How would you rank in the NFL the running back?
Let me see. Let me bring up my NFL running backs.
Okay.
I think that you have to go, do you make McCaffrey one?
McCaffrey, they have his fifth.
Okay, because he's coming off the injury. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Derrick Henry one.
Derrick Henry's one.
Yeah, Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry is one.
Let me bring up all the teams real quick.
A guy I think you might disagree with, or right, you don't see. Have as much...
Derrick Henry, I would say after that, we would go, you know, Kamara would be in play. Not Emmett, but Zeke. I don't think you can put Zeke in play. Aaron Jones is not in play. Oh, I would put Dalvin Cook, too.
They've got Kamara and then Cook.
Okay. Understandable. Kamara had a good season last year.
Nick Chubb is fourth.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that either.
No, he had a huge year. McCaffrey, Saquon. Zeke.
Now, let me guess. Jonathan Taylor?
No, Jonathan Taylor did not make the top 10.
Jonathan Taylor probably should be in the 10. Give me the rest of them.
I like Aaron Jones a lot.
Give me the rest of them.
Aaron Jones is 8. Joe Mixon is 9. And Josh Jacobs is 10.
See, I'm not. They had some good running backs in the league.
Yeah.
I don't know about Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, by the way, one of the comeback players of the year candidates. Here they are. And tell me, it's going to be a pretty good year.
Hmm.
The guy that, to me, has the best shot and the best odds, Carson Wentz, plus 1,000. That's the epitome of, it's one of two things. Carson Wentz went from considered a great quarterback to looking like complete certified garbage last year.
Whoa, stop. Watch your say.
Well, that's my son says certified garbage.
So okay.
Anyway, Carson Wentz is a perfect example of comeback player of the year that is not involving injury. It's a performance. And then Nick Bosa and Dak Prescott, who are the two favorites, they are injury-related comeback player of the year. But right behind them, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, bunch of injuries. Von Miller is 1,400. Sam Darnold would be a great story, 1,600. And then a really quiet one is Derwin James at 2,000. Odell Beckham Jr., 2,500. Danielle Hunter, 3,300.
Odell is that low? and with how big a star he is, and you know, as much fanfare as there is, or how much smoke there is around that dude, that's amazing.
Tebow 10,000, Jimmy Garoppolo 5,000. You know, that's kind of a sneaky one too. Dak would have to play really poorly to lose this, but what if Jimmy Garoppolo came back and had 35 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and 4,500 passing yards?
Yeah. Well, if he takes them to the division title and they're a Super Bowl contender, Garoppolo's got a good chance. And, you know, Odell is going to Odell, so he will bring a lot of attention to himself. I wouldn't mind. I don't think putting a little bit on Odell, whether or not Baker can get him the football as often as he likes, he's going to do a lot of stuff that brings unwanted attention on himself, because that's just Odell being Odell. But, you know, as big a star as that dude is, that might not be a bad play. I think McCaffrey's the play. I think McCaffrey's the play. Now, whether or not Joe Brady can feature a running back, because Joe Brady likes to fling it around, whether or not he will feature Christian McCaffrey. Now, he didn't last year because he didn't have Christian McCaffrey,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, why would you? You can't feature somebody. Joe Brady is a pretty sharp offensive mind, so I would imagine, although we haven't seen him do it, they didn't do it in New Orleans. They didn't do it at LSU. They didn't do it last year.
Well, Jameis is right there, and if Jameis can, you know, there's a lot of interesting, you know, the Darnold thing is really, really interesting, because comeback player of the year, he'd be coming back from his draft standing. That's what you'd argue. What is he coming back mm-hmm. from? He's coming back from being the third pick of the draft and having that elevated expectation list. I think 100% he's a perfect example. To me, there is I'd love to see an injury award and then a comeback player of the year award. I'd love to see him differentiated, because Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston,
redemption
Sam
award
Darnold,
as opposed to
something like that, because those are different types.
Yes.
Those are different.
I've never believed that you come back from suck and you should be comeback player of the year.
See, I do. I think how did you make it back? Because a lot of times when guys start sucking, they don't make it back. And making it back would be, I would love to see him differentiated. Now, Alex Smith was made for the award. That's really who the award's made for.
That's what I'm saying.
Dak Prescott had a bad break. I guess that's it. But Dak was already throwing for 400 yards. I guess if he rises to that level again, off that injury. But it's not like you don't come back from that injury. Alex was potentially life-threatening, or leg-threatening, certainly. Dak had a clean break. Dak's injury is something that you can come back from.
Mm-hmm.
You can come back from that. A knee for Saquon, he shouldn't even be on the list to me. An ACL injury, yeah, people come back from that all the time. Joe Burrow, ACL injury for a quarterback, big deal. It's harder for, frankly, Saquon than it is for a quarterback.
Yeah, probably.
But I would argue that, how do you come back from what Carson Wentz did, where his head went completely in the...
Right. I would like to see it a different category, though, like you said, a redemption category. Hey, when we come back, Matt Carpenter is going to join us on the other side. A lot of interesting stuff. Hey, I talked to him the other day, and it's really... And a lot about the Astros and where they are in baseball. We'll do that with Matt Carpenter on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Right now, though, I'm talking about the wonderful people at Chastang Ford. Where you buy your car or truck, where you buy it is kind of a big deal, because it's about, you know, what kind of price you're going to get, what kind of people you're dealing with, what kind of service that you're going to get, how hard are they going to work for you. And literally, when you buy a car from Chastang, you join the Chastang family. They really, really do care about you. It's why they're the number one commercial Ford dealer in the city of Houston. It's because all of these businesses trust Chastang Ford. They know they're going to get the best car or truck customized to exactly what they need. They've seen so much, done so much. They're going to get the service that they want, and they're going to get the bottom line for any business is the bottom line. And when you know you're going to get your best deal from Chastang Ford, that is where you're going to go. So if you're looking for that Ford car or truck, Chastang Ford is the place to go. Now, how do you want it? You order it the way you want it exactly. Don't settle for whatever the packages are. Get it the way you want it at ChastangFord.com or on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown Chastang Ford.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. real, fun sports. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Working on bringing in, is he? He's not answering? Dog. He was on his way to play golf, let's see. Let me work on that. And Lance, why don't you talk right now on the show, and I'll work on getting mad at you.
All right, I will talk on the show. By the way, when I looked at the Texans, yeah, I don't know if you recall this, John. I think it was actually game one because you talked about Edwards-Helaire. It wasn't Edwards. Yeah, Edwards-Helaire actually had 138 yards in the game against the Texans, his biggest game of the season. So it was Edwards-Helaire who had the Edwards-Helaire did have a big game against the Texans. So,
but it wasn't the guy who had the big run. It was Montgomery from the Bears.
Is Montgomery from the Bears the one that I was thinking of?
No, the one that I was thinking of.
Oh,
he broke off the run.
Because remember, everyone.
And Zach Cunningham and Justin Reed just took terrible angles.
But everyone kept getting 100-plus yards on the Texans, and Edwards-Helaire had 138.
Yeah.
In his very first game.
No, but I was talking about that was like the first, second play of the game when Montgomery broke one off tackle.
That's right. That was horrific.
Horrific.
But I'm talking about seeing it in the Chiefs game. But but we saw it in literally every game after that. Yeah. That's why the halfway through, I think Zach Cunningham is in the back half of maybe the middle of the pack in terms of linebackers in the league.
Right.
That's probably where he is.
Well, he's, yeah.
Another than that, it's Laremy Tunsil and nobody. But we're going to have a Houston Texans, we're going to end up doing we're going to spotlight 20 players of the Texans coming up for 20 days, 20 Texans. And we're going to give you a lot of insight into these players and what you need to watch and what our expectations are.
Right. Right now, though, we're bringing in a local product playing for the St. Louis Cardinals, played Little League, played Elkins, played at TCU, and now with the St. Louis Cardinals, three-time All-Star. And get this, all right, here is a little-known stat. The greatest hitter with 42 or more at-bats with the bases loaded in the history of Major
Better
League
Baseball.
Better than Yuli? In the history of Major League Baseball. Is Matt Carpenter.
Has that a real thing with 490, a pitcher?
He's 491. He's hit 491 with a 1214 OPS. Joining us right now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it. So let me ask you this, because situations are different. You've played in a World Series. It's different than playing on a Tuesday in Seattle. You walk up with nobody on and nobody out in the second inning, or you walk up with the bases loaded, and it's just different. What is it like when you're going – because you're really, really good at it. Why are you really good, and is your focus different when the bases are loaded?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, for me, it's certainly a little bit of a higher level of focus when the bases are loaded. One thing that, you know, I've kind of always kind of hung my hat on was my ability to swing at strikes. My plate discipline is kind of really what paved the way for me to my big league career. And there's really no better scenario for that to kind of play out other than with the bases loaded. You know, all the pressure's on the pitcher, doesn't want to walk you, got to come to the plate, you know, got to make an execution, you know, execute a pitch. And my mentality in that situation has always been, look, man, this guy's in a bad spot. You know, there's really no pressure on me here. I can go up here, really be patient, get something I can handle, and try to put a good swing on it. And, you know, that's kind of been the recipe that's worked for me. I've had a lot of success in that moment and, you know, just pretty much with that same mentality.
Well, not only that, but you're a fly ball hitter. You hit a fly ball with the bases loaded, you get an RBI and no at bat. If you hit a fly ball with nobody on, it's an out, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. So, I mean, it suits up well for my kind of the kind of hitter that I am. You know, I don't hit into double plays. I rarely hit the ball on the ground. You know, line drives and fly balls is kind of my MO. And so you know, a lot of those at bats have been, you know, bases loaded, less than two outs, which is just, you know, I mean, I honestly, I think if I had to put a baseball scenario, you know, a situation for me that I enjoy the most, I would say it's bases loaded, less than two outs, where sac fly is the, you know, is the worst possible scenario. I feel like I could do that, you know, in my sleep. You know, just get a fly ball to the outfield.
Matt, do you change your get into a lot of baseball like specific conversation, but do you change your swing and your approach up in terms of you talked about being patient, but at the same time, and you want to have plate discipline, but at the same time, do you alter your swing at all when it comes to, are you looking for more lift? Is there anything that you do to change your approach with bases loaded? And I'm just saying this because John mentioned your ability with bases loaded. I mean, that's impressive because we've seen one of the best ever here in, with Yuli Gurriel.
Yeah, no, he's a good one. You know, for me, I like to, you know, my dad's a baseball coach. He was my coach growing up down in Houston. I like to pride myself in just being able to play the game. And to be able to play the game, for me, the game dictates kind of what I'm going to do. The scoreboard, the game. If the game calls for, you know, a ground ball, if you got runner on third, less than two outs, and the infield's playing back, and a ground ball to short scores a run, I like to pride myself in my ability to do that. And then, you know, to your point, if it's bases loaded, one out, and a fly ball to the outfield scores the run, then certainly, yeah, I'm going to do my best to adjust my swing to accommodate, you know, the best case result that our team needs. So, you know, that's certainly, there's certainly a part of an element of that of like getting gear pitch and adjusting your swing accordingly to the situation that presents itself.
Matt Carpenter, Cardinal, three-time All-Star. Matt, what do you make of the guys opting out of the All-Star game? Does this open up a can of worms?
I think it could. I mean, there's certainly a lot of theories out there of why guys are doing what they're doing. I mean, you know, there's talk of the, you know, CBA. There's talk of, you know, a number of different reasons of potentially why they did it and why guys are doing it. But, you know, hey, look, at the end of the day, you know, everybody's got their own decision on whether they want to play in that game or not. I think this year, more than ever, with the extensive protocols that Major League players have had to go through the last two seasons, you know, when you get an opportunity for 5 days off away from that and some time with your family, sometimes the grass is a little greener on that side than it is going and playing a game when you have that time off. So, I mean, who knows what decision each guy individually did, but you know, it's hard to blame them, you know, whatever it is.
Some of it might be, you know what, Orbit got booed last night. He's the Astros mascot. He got booed last night mercilessly. There are no Astros players there. Some of it might have been, you know what, I don't feel like putting up with all that BS. Here's a quote from Chris Bassett, the A's pitcher. I think it's a, now this is about the Astros scandal. I think it's a bigger media story than player story. It wasn't just the Astros, so it is what it is. Obviously, I have teammates who played with them. I know how good of people those guys are. They were stuck in a bad situation, so yeah, I think it's a massive media thing. But from a player standpoint, I think a lot of people are kind of over it. What's your take on that?
You know what? I totally agree. You know, here's been my take the entire time. I feel like, you know, the Astros were pointed out and kind of almost like a witch hunt. There was an issue going on across Major League Baseball. They certainly weren't the only team doing something of that sort. It was a pretty widespread epidemic across the league, similar to what we're dealing with now with the sticky stuff. I think that, you know, the Astros just kind of fell on the cross, so to speak, for everybody. You know, I can only speak in terms of the team I've played for. To my knowledge, that I have yet to be a part of anything like that. We just weren't doing it. And to be honest, we're probably stuck behind the times a little bit because it seems like there was a lot of clubs doing it, specifically that year, you know, the 2017, 2018, kind of during that time frame. So, you know, to say that the Houston Astros were the only team in Major League Baseball doing something to that extent is just, I think, completely false. And they had to, you know, wear the brunt of the decision that was made. And, you know, I don't think it was very fair. And you know, I know a lot of those guys personally. You know, Jose Altuve is a friend, a guy that I have a ton of respect for. And I believe everything that has come out about him, even in like during that deal, you know, his teammates said, look, this is a guy who never even wanted to know what was coming. I believe that 100%. I mean, based off of who I know he is and the kind of hitter he is, to me, that's just my opinion on it, you know, for what it's worth. But, you know, it was an unfortunate thing for the entire game, you know, but look, you know, Major League Baseball, this is everybody's always looking for something. And guys look for it, you know, it comes out as cheating. But when you're in the moment, you know, guys are thinking, you know, I'm just looking for an advantage. And, again, back to my original point, they weren't the only team doing that.
Yeah. Matt Carpenter with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So the guys who benefit, we know the guys that benefited the most from it, Marwin Gonzalez, Tyler White, Jake Mariznick, those guys kind of went by the wayside since all of it. You know who's really hitting well? Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa. You know what good hitters are going to do? Good hitters are going to hit, aren't they, Matt?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, look, you know, this is, you know, I can almost compare this to like steroids. I mean, steroids are going to take a guy who's a fringy major leaguer and they're going to make him an average to above average major leaguer. And if you've got, you know, an average big leaguer and he takes steroids, he's going to become above average and so on and so forth. You take above average big leaguers, they're going to become elite if they're taking some kind of steroids. Well, I mean, listen, 90% of the Houston Astros roster are guys who can really hit. I mean, to think that, you know, stealing signs was credit for the kind of players they are, then you're just not paying attention to the game. These guys are really good players, and they're going to hit regardless of whether they know what was coming. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all that those guys are having good years. They're really good players, and, you know, they're going to continue to hit for the remainder of their career.
I think it diminishes the act of hitting if you just assume that that anybody who gets any signs. And people, you know, it's I'm going to ask you this because you're a player, but, you know, when you think about it, there's like players and catchers can change signs, pitchers can change signs throughout the game. The ability to see the sign, relay it to a teammate, and then a teammate bangs on the trash can to relay it to the hitter. And all this has to happen after a player gets set and then is going to deliver a pitch in 2 seconds. I mean, the turnaround on that is so fast that that really is not going to be as efficient as people think. But I'm curious about your thoughts about if you had that, if you knew you had that and the pitcher had spider tack on his side, who's got the bigger advantage in that moment and also over the course of a season?
Oh, man. What a question. I tell you, you talk about a can of worms, you get into the debate on, you know, who's cheating more between pitchers and hitters. We could go on this for hours. I, you know, look, this is a conversation that gets talked about in clubhouses every day, especially right now during this time. I mean, I feel like Major League Baseball has done a good job of, you know, policing this. Maybe the way it has been handled and the way it's gone, probably maybe not the best ideal. I mean, throwing something together in the middle of a season like this and having these umpires kind of wear the brunt of, you know, playing, you know, ball monitor out there. I'm not sure that that's the best way, but their hands are tied and there's not much that they could do. So, but all that being said, you know, it's made a big difference. The way that pitchers were able to manipulate this ball with the foreign substance was, I mean, it was pretty substantial. I mean, the stuff that was going on. So, you know, that's obviously a huge advantage. And then you got, you know, to your question, if I know what's coming and a pitcher's got some stuff on the ball, it's still going to be pretty hard to hit. I mean, those guys, you know, being able to cut and sink a pitch 98 to 100 miles an hour and it moving really at a rate that kind of defies, you know, logic, it can make it challenging. And that's kind of, you know, my whole deal. There have been times where I'm facing a guy in the major leagues and he holds his glove a certain way and he tips his pitches to the hitter, you know, he's got a big glove on a changeup, or, you know, his forearm twitches when he grabs a curveball. I mean, there's guys out there like that. And I've had plenty of at-bats where I've picked up on something like that, knew something was coming, and hit a ground ball right to the first baseman. So, I mean, hitting in the major leagues is hard, regardless of whether you know what's coming or not. And if, you know, a pitcher's got something on his finger that's making his ball move a little bit more, it's going to make it even tougher.
Matt Carpenter with us here on ESPN 97.5. It sounds to me like, as a guy growing up, you were an Astro fan. You still are. You're not all that bummed about it. You're in the last year of your deal. What about coming here to finish up your career?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I definitely grew up in, you know, the Houston area, right down the road in Sugar Land, which is where I believe AAA is now for the Stros. And yeah, I mean, I grew up in the, you know, Killer B era, Biggio, Bagwell, Berkman, you know, so a lot of summer nights spent at what was Enron Field. I think is it Minute Maid still?
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, that a lot of good memories. I played some high school playoff games there. So, you know, I would certainly welcome any opportunity to do that. You know, but kind of the old adage to baseball, we got to take it one day at a time. So I'm just kind of staying focused on our season and doing whatever I can for our club. But we'll see what happens.
You came in the league in 11, if I remember correctly. And you've been with one team for the duration. What's that in today? We're seeing that less and less. Can you talk about, we're hoping Carlos Correa sticks around, obviously, with the Astros. Can you talk about that ability to stay with one franchise? And you're with a franchise that has a history of doing things like that. Can you talk about what that means to you to be able to stick with one franchise? And have you ever been itchy to see, you know, what would it be like in another city or another franchise? Has that ever crossed your mind?
You know, to be completely honest, it hasn't crossed my mind a ton, just because I'm so lucky and have been so blessed to put on, you know, this Cardinal uniform for the, you know, the whole duration of my career. You know, it's funny, you know, growing up in Houston as an Astros fan, you know, the Stros have gotten their hearts broken by the Cardinals a few times in their history, you know, more than once. And, you know, a guy named Albert Pujols made things a little tough on us as a fan.
So you were a fan watching Pujols go yard, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It was the worst.
I mean, that was a tough one to swallow. So, I mean, when my name was called, you know, from the draft in 2009 by St. Louis, I mean, the amount of emotions that was going through me, both excitement and also kind of, you know, man, this is a team that I obviously did not root for growing up. But it was a special day. And then what turned out to be something that, you know, St. Louis is home for me now. You know, we've raised a family, my wife and I were married, you know, we've had two kids, we've raised our kids in that town. You know, our fan base has been nothing but amazing, playing and putting that uniform on, the history, you know, that Busch Stadium and all the greats that have played, you know, it's just been a really special thing. And to be able to wear that one uniform for this long, it's something that I'm very proud of and something I don't take lightly. And just really respectful of everything and all the opportunities that I've had. And, you know, would hate to see it come to an end. And, you know, but obviously that always happens one day. You know, you're going to take the jersey off at some point. But it's been a really fun ride.
Yeah. You know, 11 seasons in St. Louis. We'll see what happens after this. We got a question here from a listener. Whose salsa is better, yours or Bregman's?
That's a great question. I've seen Alex's post, and I know he's got that thing rolling. I've yet to try it. You know, but I'm obviously a little biased. I think mine's pretty good. I'm actually at my ranch in Texas spending the All-Star break, and the garden is alive and well, so I might fire up some this evening.
You might fire fresh up salsa. Some salsa
fresh
this
salsa.
Evening.
Yeah.
Fresh salsa.
Are you fire roasting the tomatoes, or are we just keeping them? Or are we just keeping them as is?
You know, I do both. I've got one recipe, and I just make it two different ways. Sometimes I'll, you know, straight out of the garden, fresh, or sometimes we'll take the the vegetables out, throw them on the smoker, give them that kind of mesquite flavor. We'll make it that way. And then sometimes I just throw them on a grill and kind of give the fire roasted. So it's like three different flavors, three different tastes, but the same exact recipe.
Yeah. See, what I like to do.
No, it's a bigger accomplishment. See, Lance always likes to tell people how he cooks his stuff.
That's the thing. That's the thing I do, Matt. That's the thing on the show.
So, Matt, bigger accomplishment. You having the card beaten Stan Musial for the Cardinals record for most doubles in a season, or you and Chad Huffman being the only people in history to play on the same little league team, high school team, college team, and major league team?
Mm.
Golly, I mean, that's a tough one. Those both mean a lot to me. I think for the sake of honoring the late, great Stan Musial and getting booed from all Cardinal fans that have ever watched, if I don't answer it this way, I'd have to say that one. But playing at every level with Chad is something that, you know, both of us hold dear to our heart. It's pretty special. I mean, to grow up, you know, best friends with a guy and to hit literally every single level and then, put on the same major league uniform one day. I mean, like you said, we don't know for sure. I don't know if they track stats like that from years ago, but I'd just be shocked if anybody's ever done that.
Speaking of Stan Musial, do you remember when Musial's, it was either his daughter or son-in-law wrote a strongly worded letter to the station and to me because I took shots at Tony La Russa and, of course, Albert Pujols. Not took shots. I just said he made me want to vomit blood in the driveway every time he hit a home run because the Astros continued to pitch to him for some unknown reason. But I think I went after Tony La Russa, and they were just, they were taken aback.
Yeah, nobody loved that. What did you learn from Lance Berkman the year you played with him?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we don't have enough time on the show to talk about all the stuff that guy taught me. I mean, Lance, I've said this before, to anybody really who will listen, that Lance is one of the best teammates, best friends, funniest guys, smartest guys, and one of the best baseball guys I've ever been around. I mean, I am – he's just an impressive human being, and he's just one of those guys that's going to leave a lasting mark with you no matter, you know, how much time you spend with them. This couple off seasons ago, right before the pandemic hit, he came up and spent about a week up here in North Texas at my ranch, and we just sat around all day in the afternoon hitting in the cage and spent the evening sitting around a campfire, him telling stories of the good old days. And you can imagine for a guy like me who grew up watching this guy play, to have that experience was pretty special. So I've got a countless amount. I mean, this is a guy. I mean, not many guys get to have a childhood hero become a friend, and he's on that list for me. And so, the amount of stuff he's taught me, both on and off the field, is endless.
Matt Carpenter with us here on ESPN 97.5. Yadi Molina, we had this conversation. The first ballot Hall of Famer. What's your favorite? And he is right. He is your guys' clubhouse leader. He is the guy that you guys all look to. What's your favorite Yadi Molina stat?
Jeez. I mean, that is a tough one. I think that I'll just tell you a quick story about him. I mean, this guy is as tough as in mentally strong and just as competitive as any person I've ever been around. I mean, he's literally, they could do a Save the Last Dance type of documentary about Yadier Molina. That's the kind of guy he is.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he makes everybody around him better. He's one of those guys that just sees the field differently. You know, you've heard this term, somebody's made this analogy before. It's like, you got a group of people on the field all playing checkers and one guy's playing chess, and that's him. I mean, he is just on another level. He sees the game at a different speed and just is able to process and analyze the game just differently. And, you know, that comes from years of hard work and practice, but, you got to think about it. He's the youngest of three brothers that all three of them played Major League Baseball catcher on World Series, you know, championship teams. So the DNA that this guy, I mean, he's just built for it. He's just special. And so, you know, I got a blue million stories about him, but, you know, he just, you know, I can't even, I could tell you a million different ones, but I'll just say that, you know, I'll just leave it at, man, this guy, he's just on another level when it comes to playing, and one of my favorite teammates and a guy that you just want to go to war with.
Yadi, yeah, and if you got to look up Yadi Molina if you don't. He's a first ballot. That dude is a first ballot Hall of Fame, and I don't think he gets that kind of love. I don't, you know, maybe I don't know why, but you know, when we talk about the guys that are sure things, Yadi is as sure as anybody right now in the game.
He is for sure. So I'll give you one quick story. This is one of my favorite things that he does. He's done this numerous times. So he's calling a game, and you know, he's getting to a big spot, and he's, you know, he's calling whatever, and if the, you know, pitcher shakes, you know, he'll calmly kind of, you know, shake his head like, hey, stay with me here, and give the same sign again, pitcher shakes. And, you know, he'll try it one more time, and if he shakes again, then he's like, all right, throw it. And the guy throws whatever. Well, for the rest of the inning, I've seen him, because he's upset with the guy that didn't listen to him, guy gets a base hit, scores a run, whatever. He's upset with the guy. He just gives them the, like, all right, big boy, go ahead, throw what you want. Doesn't put a sign down, catches every pitch, doesn't know what's coming.
And that,
I mean,
ain't,
I've never
easy.
These guys are throwing, you know, 100 mile an hour with breaking stuff. I mean, I could barely hit it, and he's catching it and doesn't know what's coming.
That's hard. You see how catchers act when they get crossed up.
Oh, yeah.
In general.
I've seen him do it. I mean, I don't have enough fingers on my hand to count the times I've seen the guy do it, and it's pretty impressive to watch.
Well, you need to catch, because that's the only position that you haven't played yet. And
I tell you what, he's going to have to retire, because he never takes a day off either.
You got to tell him, in a, you know, in a 9-run game in the ninth inning, hey, Yadi, let me go. Let me in. Let me go catch.
That would be... I mean, I'll try. I'm going to do my best. That's the one I'm kind of afraid of, though, I'll be honest.
And what's your ERA as a pitcher?
It's a zero.
Zero.
I got one scoreless inning.
What?
That's all I care about.
That's it. That's it. One scoreless inning. And how you were humping it up at what, 80, 90?
Oh, I don't think I've ever touched 80 or 90 across the diamond. I was probably sitting 40 to 55.
You just lobbed it up there.
As slow as I could go. I mean, I've hit off pitchers before, or hitters before. When a position player is on the mound, there's two things I notice. If the guy throws hard, he gets smashed. But if you throw it as slow as you can, it almost always works.
Yeah, always. Always. And you got a zero ERA on top of everything else. Well, man, we appreciate it. Thanks for hanging with us. Your insight is great. And thanks for being here. Best of luck. Have fun. I know you're playing golf today. Have fun with your dad. That is just great stuff. And hopefully we'll run into you and get you on the show again.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me. Y'all enjoy the rest of the week.
All right. There's Matt Carpenter, Elkins High School, here on ESPN 97.5. Just a great guy, you guys. And I know, listen, I know he's not, somebody said, hey, he's hitting 180. Listen, you know where he was at the beginning of the season? Last year was weird with the COVID, and this year he got off to a slow start. But that dude can rake. That dude can rake. So, and he, you know what? He doesn't even, if the Astros picked him up, he could be your Aledmys Diaz next year. He can play every position.
We got an Aledmys Diaz.
No, we don't. He's never here.
Oh, we've got ghost of Aledmys Diaz.
Right. We've got his ghost here.
No, we've got Aledmys. I saw a video. Oh. We got to break it. We got about a... We got a break coming
up.
Yeah, no,
we got. We missed a break.
A sporty one.
Oh, well. Oh, well. You need to talk about TGS Insurance.
Oh, good. TGS Insurance is a chance for you to lower your homeowner's insurance. If you, and it's never been easier. I know a lot of people don't like to, you know, do things that are going to hassle them during the day. I don't have time for this. I'd rather just pay an extra $900 annually. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. What if I told you they'd make it as easy as possible? And this was a big, I'll admit it, this is an advantage for me. I texted the word money to 232323. It came back, you know, what's your address? I gave it to them. I got a quote back almost immediately from the lowest rated that they had. They sent me an email with the different insurance rates that they could offer, and these are A-rated companies. And I chose one. They also got me a different car insurance because I was going to lose my quote-unquote bundle. And we were off to the races, and the whole thing took a matter of, I think I got switched over in about 45 minutes. Maybe it was an hour. I had everything done. I was switched over that same day, and they handled the entire process for me. All I had to do was DocuSign something. And before you knew it, I had a check coming back because I had prepaid, and I had a check coming back for the prorated amount for my homeowner's insurance. And they make it so easy at TGS Insurance. Text the word money to 232323 and take advantage today.
ESPN 97.5.